Back Talk is an extension of the long-running, award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests. And sitting in for John DeSando, I'm your host this week, Mary Urena, and with me is my guest,
Beth Malkus Staffa.
And this is Back Talk. So, Beth, we saw this movie together.
Yes,
can you tell the audience just what is it about?
It's about a movie theater. It takes place in the 1980s, and it's about the relationships of the people who actually work at the movie theater.
Now, you and I, this...
Oh.
This is so much to remember. You will edit that out. This week, we're talking about the movie Empire of Light.
Yes. And it took place in England, on a beach town in England, and in the 1980s, which, you know, our time in high school.
It was our time in high school.
And it's about a rundown movie theater that was probably at its prime in the Art Deco times. And mainly it's about the people who worked at this movie theater and their lives.
And particularly one character is truly the focus of this, and that's Hillary, who's played by the always incredible Olivia Colman. What did you think of her character in this film?
You know, she was kind of a mystery. How's that? It starts out as a mystery about who this woman really is, and you... I'm going to break. who this woman really is, and you later find out that she has a mental illness, and how the people around her, to me, is intriguing how the people around her sort of took her for what she was or who she was with her mental illness.
Yeah, it was really interesting, I thought, to see not only how this movie theater, the Empire of Light Theater, brought these disparate people together, but also how in this time, which was 40 years ago, not to date ourselves, but that how mental illness was treated. We have somewhat of an image in our minds that things were not to the standard that they are today, especially with mental health coming to the fore so much during the recent right. pandemic times. But also we're reminded through one of the characters in particular, cast against type, Colin Firth plays right. the manager of this theater. And he, in the end, does not treat her very well. And it was a reminder of how people with mental illness, I think, could be taken advantage of and still probably are today. And I also think it reflected on the cycle that people who have mental illness go through, which we don't often see portrayed. We forget that the drugs that they take, in this case, she's being prescribed lithium, has side effects that manage her disease, which they refer to as schizophrenia in the film, but it sounded more like it was portrayed more like it was bipolar, right. I think. So Dr. Mary is diagnosing the character here. I just thought it was a real interesting take on how far we've come and that there are good people out there who surround Hillary with love mm-hmm. and caring, but then it was a reminder of how much we still don't know, how far we still have to go, and that there are still bad actors out there who right. will take advantage of people right. with mental illness.
Yeah, and I think that in one of the scenes, the discussion about, I guess her rant. There's two scenes. There's at the beach, and she's angry, and then in her apartment she's angry at men, and the men that she names sounds like these are men that have taken advantage of her, because often, you know, what I'm told, again, I'm not a doctor, that oftentimes mental illness can start when you're in young adult. And so her talking about a professor, teachers,
and her father,
and her, what it sounds like, workplaces, all these men seem to have taken advantage, and in the case at her current workplace, advantage of her sexually.
Absolutely. And the other counterpart to her in this kind of universe of light at the theater is a young man named Steven, who we're introduced to, who I thought was a revelation as an actor. It's a young man named Michael Ward. He's a Jamaican British young actor. We haven't seen too much of him in the United States yet, but you know, for him to come in and play this counterpoint and develop such a lovely relationship as Stephen with Hillary, played by Olivia Colman, he's just amazing and is a great partner, I thought, on screen with Olivia.
Yes. I just thought, I was just awed by this young man and his ability. And I'm just like, more to come on him. And I'm anxious to see movies that he does in the future, because he really does pull off the role at, first of all, dealing with being an interracial couple at the time, and also being in a relationship with an older woman. So Hillary is about maybe 40, and he's in his early 20s, and Stephen is black, and Hillary is white. And so they're having to skip through a lot of social constructs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, this is a time in 1980 UK that Thatcher has just been elected prime minister. There's huge social upheaval with regards to the Conservatives and Labour.
There's a lot of strikes going on.
And it was also the rise of the punks of, mm-hmm. you know, who were. And we see that portrayed in this film, where, you know, basically young men, unemployed, nothing better to do than be mean and violent towards other people. And there's a pivotal scene in the film where that comes to the fore, where Stephen becomes a victim of that violence. And I appreciated that we saw the scene, and that it pretty much was no holds bar. I mean, in terms of what he was afflicted with and being attacked in this film. And I just so appreciated that. Although I do think the film is so well made and so well crafted. And we should note that it's directed and written by Sam Mendes, who seems like everything he makes and touches is so well crafted. His first film, American Beauty, won 5 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Director. So he's no slouch when it comes to films. No. But this is, I think, the first film that he wrote the screenplay for exclusively. And it's autobiographical in the sense that the mental illness component was inspired by his mom. And the other aspects of it, the racism, the setting of what was happening in England at the time, and then the tribute to 1980s films, which is where, I mean, he's our age, so this is where he really developed his love of film as a form of escapism for himself, but it also helped him learn about the greater world. And it's just an incredibly well-crafted film, but it does bring two big issues to the fore, mental illness and racism. And sometimes I felt like there wasn't enough time in the film to really address both equally well.
Right. And I think also the because it was a group of characters, there were several characters that I think I would have liked to know more, like Neil, played by Tom Brooks. His character seems to be, I would consider him a very wise hero in it, because he steps in at different times to point out things. I would like to know more about his background. And it seems like also the Norman, played by Toby Jones.
Always a fabulous character actor that I'm sure many people will recognize.
His character, you really don't get to know. It's like less than five minutes we get to really understand why he's locked himself into this cinema room. to run the cameras.
Yeah, he's the projectionist. Yeah. Back in the day when you had reels to watch films. And I agree with you. There were some really lovely characters. And I would almost consider the character of Norman that you just referenced as kind of the Solomon of the film, because he really seems to be the giver of wisdom to the other characters. Especially, there's a lovely scene with him and Olivia Colman where he's giving some wisdom to her in terms of how to move forward with her life. And one of the most beautiful scenes is when she finally, after working in this theater, wants to see a film, and she's like, I don't care, show me any film. And the film that he chooses to show her actually was one of my favorite films from that era, and that was Being There.
Yes.
So there's lots more to come, especially since we haven't even talked about the character of the theater or the references to the early 1980s film. So, Beth, we were talking about the 1980s and the films that you're reminded of in many ways through this film. What were some of your favorites?
That came up in the posters and on the kiosk. I saw, you know, the Blues Brother posters. I saw Empire Strikes Back, I think, in there. What I thought was very uniquely referenced in one of the scenes was 9 to 5, because Hillary's coworkers were realizing what was going on between her and her boss, the imbalance. And they referenced, you know, I think they asked her, did you ever see 9 to 5? And I was like, everybody's seen 9 to 5 except poor Hillary, you know.
Because she doesn't go to the films that she is a part of in being the night manager for this theater. I thought it was really interesting how they referenced so many of those credits. It's in the, as you said, in the marquee above the theater entrance. It's in the posters. It's in their conversations. And I'm a credit reader. So when we stayed, because we saw the film together and read all the credits, I was stunned with the number of films that they were able to reference from that era. And I was like, I missed some of them. How did I miss them? But it was a lot of fun. And so for our audience that does go see the film, and I think both of us would encourage you to do that, definitely stay and read the credits, because it'll bring back, I think, a lot of fond memories.
Yes, yes. You know, I actually went and re-looked up some of the movies of that time, and I was like, huh, I forgot. Yeah, Private Benjamin.
Private Benjamin, I did
Stripes.
See that one.
On Golden Pond, you know, I forgot that was, you know, that was that time period.
Yeah, too. A lot of really good films. And these are the films that influenced our writer and director, Sam Mendes.
Right.
So it was really great to see all those. The other aspect of the film that I thought was a character, and you referenced it as soon as we were walking out of the theater, was the cinematography.
Right.
And the cinematographer on this film is Roger Deakins, who has partnered with Sam Mendes 5 or 6 times. Most spectacularly, probably for the larger audience, would be 2 of the James Bond films, Spectre and Skyfall. But he also partnered with them on 1917. So tell me a little bit about your impressions of
when I was looking at the film, you start getting into the film, but even at the beginning of the film, and this is why it has to be seen on a big screen, each image, each scene feels like there was so much thought in how it looks, how it aligns, to give feeling and depth. I mean, you could take a snapshot of each of those images and hang them on your wall. They were so beautiful.
And interestingly, this was shot on location in Margate, which is in southeast England. It was shot in a coastal town and was on location. They only used the exterior of a theater that was being renovated for the exterior shots. They actually built the entire interior where a lot of the film takes place. And I thought it was interesting in interviews with the actors, they said when they walked on the set, they felt like they were taken back into that era of a theater. where you had the big proscenium stage, the red velvet covered seats. But they also said something interesting, and that was this was a theater that, as you referenced, had seen better days. And so they actually built into it mold. Like you could see mold on the paint on the ceiling. And so that every detail, down to the candy that's served in the concession, was all from that era and all kind of had that feel. And it really transported them back, which I'm sure helped them as characters get into their roles and get into the stories. But it's beautiful. And we're so blessed here in Central Ohio to have stunningly beautiful preserved theaters. And for me, it was a reminder when you first go into the Empire main theater, it was a reminder that a lot of those theaters were lost and that the Ohio started out as a film theater, a silent film theater. And we are so fortunate that we get to walk in and have that feeling in our own community every day.
Every day, yeah.
If we wanted to.
Right, especially during the summer.
Yes. So tell me what you thought of what I felt was another character, and that was the music, which was composed by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Yeah, I thought the music had a very, it was reminiscent, like some of the music was, you know, from the 80s that you could easily recognize. But then the music that was part of the background had sort of a dreamy sense, and it was just beautiful. I mean, it fit with what, you know, you have this beautiful scene that you're being shown, and then you have this beautiful music going behind that scene. So together, it was like it was emotional. It made you feel very emotional.
I agree. I actually.
I cried.
I got a tear too for maybe not because of the music, but for another reason in the film, which I don't want to give away, because I will say it's towards the end, and I was just like begging for a hug to happen between two of the characters, and it did, and it brought a tear to my eye. But the music, I think, added to it, and it was one of the other reasons to stay for the credits, is you get to hear this lovely score, which I think has already been nominated for a Golden Globe, and I think cinematography-wise, that has also received a Golden Globe nomination as well. So it's just a phenomenal story. It's not a perfect film.
No, it is.
But I think it's worth seeing, and it's a lovely film, and Olivia Colman's performance is
stunning.
Yeah. I a lot of people have said, because you see it on the trailer, that it's one of her best performances, and I would have to agree with that. It's a character that she's flawed because she's mentally ill, and she makes decisions that you're like, ah, why is she doing that? And then you understand it's part of her mental illness. And Olivia Colman does a wonderful job of making her sympathetic and helping you understand mental illness, I think, better through this character. But then also understanding through her connection and relationship with Stephen that you just never know who you're going to connect with in this life and have that'll change you and have a meaningful relationship for you. And and through those two characters and the struggles that they both have, they find each other and have this bond that is inexplicable to many others, but makes sense to them and makes them better for who they are.
So this is my question to you.
Okay.
Do you think it is a holiday movie? And we have the horror movies out there and the rompy, silliness out there. Do you think it's a holiday movie?
I think it's a holiday movie, one, because there's all sorts of holidays throughout the year. But two, I think the humanity of it, for me, is what brings out the true spirit of the holidays that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. So yes, I would say.
Yeah, I thought it was a holiday movie too, because it sort of brought off like maybe an instruction book on how we could be better, take care of each other better. And I think that post-COVID and how people have been like isolated in our homes and have lost the connection sort of gives a, again, the meaning of of the holidays of getting together and learning how to connect and be better to each other.
That is a lovely way to end Back Talk. Beth, I want to thank you for being my guest today, and I want to thank John DeSando for giving me an opportunity to be guest host this week. So hopefully we'll see you again soon on Back Talk.